Okay, thank you, John. So I will be talking about our efforts towards contributing to the project of standardizing content for the CSDE position statements. And let me, before I start, I want to acknowledge that what I'm presenting is work that has had a lot of different folks contributing ideas and effort and whatnot, in particular Sundak and Rita Altamore is here, and John Abalera, and three graduate informatics students at the University of Utah, in particular Jason Jacobs and Eunyoung Han and Jeff Duncan. And also, this work is done with support from the NLM training grant as well as the CDC Center of Excellence in Public Health Informatics. So I'll just provide some background information and then talk about one objective briefly, which is the effort to assess logic and standardize logic. And that was in the abstract, but the focus of this talk and what's coming afterward is more about the case report content, so I'll be focusing on that for this talk. And then I'll just go into what we've specifically done, what our findings were, and what proposed strategy we've come up with, and then what we recommend for next steps. So first, I just want to make sure everybody is oriented to the definitions that we'll be talking about during today. Reportable conditions is the term we're using for things that are reportable from a clinical setting to public health initially. Notifiable conditions are those things that are reported from public health to CDC. So we are talking only about reportable conditions, how you get the data out of the lab or the hospital and into the public health setting in order to do an investigation. And basically you've got case reports and lab reports going to, it could be local or state, you know, in Utah now this is combined, but this is the general idea. And then there's different functions that are tasks, activities that happen during different phases of this process. Initially, someone needs to apply case reporting criteria to find out if there's an event that's relevant for reporting. Then somebody or something, a system, gathers the information to create a report or message. Then that message gets sent, and that sending message, the standards associated with that are what are ELR standards or, you know, the CDA standard that John just mentioned and whatnot. The purpose of this talk is about these first two things, how you standardize what you're going to be reporting, going to be reporting in the first place, and then what is the information that needs to be gathered in order to compile a report. We are not addressing what the standard is once you package it, and we're not addressing case classification. And I want to make sure everyone knows that Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists produce position statements. Those are their positions, basically their policy on what is reportable. And you can go to the website and see the position statements that are published every year and updated every year. And the CSTE is the organization that represents the epidemiologists that are out in the states doing the work and what needs to, and the practice of public health. The position statements, the primary target of the position statements is for the epidemiologists to solidify this is what we agreed upon and to harmonize all their input. The secondary target is the reporting entities, although really they're not in a format that's available, usable for the reporting entities. And in the position statements, there's a definition of the problem that's trying to be solved by this policy, the desired actions and goals, the surveillance methods, is it death record surveillance or, you know, case reporting or just ELR, for example. They identify the criteria for reporting and what the content of the case report should be, the definition for case classification, how often surveillance should be done, every month, every 3 days, every whatever, and then the data sharing and release criteria. So you'd think that all of this would be enough to be able to just say, okay, here we go, now we're done. But I wish. So the position statements, I wanted to, where's my little lights? So down here at the bottom, there are different sections of the position statements that relate to the different tasks that we talked about. So there's a section And it has a table that has the reporting criteria. There's a section 6C that is the chunk of information about what should be included in a case report. There's nothing that specifies how it should be sent. That's what a whole discussion about how to standardize the messaging is about. And then there's another section of the position statement that has to do with case classification. So we're talking about these two here. I also wanted to make sure you realize that the position statements, there's two. If you were to specify what should be included in a case report, there's one position statement that has the common core that defines things about demographics and identifiers and encounter information. That's what John talked about, is a document that's been published just recently in the 2011 position statements. There's also a whole set of, 72-plus position statements for each reportable condition. And in each of those, there's an unstructured section that says, what does the epidemiologist want to have sent that's disease-specific? And that's where there's a tabulation of exposure information and procedure information that or travel history questions and whatnot. So at the University of Utah, these position statements are fodder for public health informatics student projects. And so for 2 years in a row, I've had the students in my public health informatics class. I gave them each a disease. We always have fun with that. And, anthrax and TB and whatnot. And they would each take the position statement for that disease, and I'd have them look at, these are computer science, engineering. These are students that come from that kind of a background. They're the kind of people that would be implementers in a reporting system, who technically you should be able to hand them a document, and they should be able to come up with, this is what we need to do. So we ask them, is the case detection logic and classification logic usable and implementable? Can you take this table and decide how to create your logic? Is the content in the case report, that would be that unstructured section and the common core section, specific, consistent, inclusive of the info needed for public health response and classification? They don't know what public health really does, but they have conversations with the public health folks, and I give them some feedback, and they also look at what public health says they need to do case investigation based on their case investigation forms and whatnot. And then they think about whether the information specified for a case report is likely to be in an EHR. And basically, they've evaluated addressing these questions and also tried to harmonize data elements. In 2010, anyway, we took the data, the position statements for the different diseases, and then tried to harmonize across the different diseases to look at variation in how things that should be asked for in a similar way, are they asked the same way or differently in the different position statements. And basically, when they looked at the case report content, they basically found lots of pre-coordinated concepts. For example, has the patient received long-term dialysis? That's pre-coordinated. You've got the it's dialysis plus long-term, whatever that means. There are lots of examples of that. There are varying time frames of interest. There'll be questions about dialysis or hemodialysis in the past 2 to 6 months, two weeks to 6 months, or dialysis in the past 6 weeks to 6 months. So if you did that using a terminology model, you'd be asking two different questions. And basically, when you start combining things, you get combinatorial explosion and asking the same thing but with different time frames, across different diseases. Sometimes the labels are inconsistent for the same concept or ambiguous, and there seems to be unnecessary variation. And there seems to be a mismatch between public health requests for yes-no answers and then the way that data is typically stored in an electronic record. For example, the question is, has the person had dialysis? When you think about it in the EHR, it wouldn't be, yes, the person had dialysis. It would be a procedure of dialysis occurred on this date and whatnot. So there's the mismatch, which is understandable. It's just that's the way it is. So here's an example. So this is in the position statements, the section for disease-specific data elements is unstructured. So this is an example of the one for Hep B. And, it itemizes the thing that the epidemiologist wanted. And then they specify, let's see. So So just for an example, epidemiologic risk factors. They want, during the past 6 weeks to 6 months, prior to the onset of symptoms, we wanted the number of male sexual partners. So that's a very specific question. And then in the next one, but it is subsumed by the time frame. On the next one, hepatitis A, you'll have that they want to know epi risk factors during the 2 to 8 weeks prior to the onset of symptoms. And then there's a separate section on number of female sex partners. You're not sure if those are within that time frame. I think you would assume that they are if you know anything about Hep A investigation and whatnot. But an implementer doesn't know that. I mean, they just would have no idea why you would, whether it would be important to know that during that time frame. So this is just one sort of really specific example. One thing I want to point out is this problem is not unique to public health. This is exactly the same problem that happens in the clinical setting when you're gathering requirements for logic and whatnot from clinicians. So this isn't, and in fact, some of the clinical folks who have a lot of experience in developing decision support systems in the clinical setting have said, actually, this is really far down the road of getting information. It still isn't good enough, but it's better than sometimes you'd see in the clinical world starting decision support. So it's not that this is all bad. It's just that this isn't good enough. So let's see. And here we've got the number of female sex partners. And then for Hep C, chronic, you know, it's the same thing, but it's total number of female sex partners. These are just examples of the variation across. Then you also have, you know, examples of different time frames. Do you create a LOINC code for each of these concepts? And what happens if public health wants to change their mind on the dates that they're interested in? Would you create a new LOINC code for that? And then have surgery, what type of surgery? Any surgery, any time, ever? It's, and then long-term, do you just want to know if they've had dialysis? And then if they've had dialysis, tell me what dates are relevant and whatnot. So the other thing that we found in the reporting logic, after manually reviewing the case reporting criteria within the 2010 position statements, just for viral hepatitis, we identified logical inconsistencies that could result in duplicate reporting, you know, in both Hep B and Hep C. Also, inconsistencies between the narrative and the tabular logic, and also unnecessary and overly complicated logic. Basically, logic that if the simple logic came true, you don't need the more complicated logic because it's going to come true with the simple logic. So why worry about all the symptoms and whatnot? And also, we identified extra data fields listed that are not contributing to any of the logic. They might be useful to include in a case report, but they're not useful for the logic. So we had two objectives. One is to systematically review and test case reporting logic in the position statements, particularly to identify logic that resolves true for more than one position statement, and also to allow epidemiologists to identify and fix inconsistencies and test improvements with the reporting logic. So this could be a whole nother talk, but I just want to sort of mention that we did this and we could follow up more later. But basically, one of the students who is a computer science and engineer developed an automated logic analyzer interface to be able to take the logic in the position statements and implement the ends, which are necessary, O, optional, A. What is A again? I can't remember what A is, and sufficient. And basically, and with this tool, you can change the logic and then look at how much overlap there is between coming true within a disease with different logic statements. I know you can't see it, so anyway. And then also, look at the overlap in the logic criteria for a particular disease, and also look at the overlap in the criteria between diseases. And by changing things, you can start to see how the O's and the N's and the A's all play out and can fix it. And in April, we worked with the hepatitis position statement authors, and actually, they tested their logic and tweaked it, and we helped them to refine it some. And they gave some good feedback. And it would, anyway, so this is sort of there for use for the future if needed. And then the second objective was to propose a strategy for ongoing development and maintenance of CSDE position statement data elements used for public health case reporting. And this is specifically what the CRSWG was also interested in. So basically, we reviewed 10 position statements, those listed here, and then we harmonized the data elements and mapped the concepts that we expect would be found in an EHR. And then we evaluated the, for example, you know, dialysis in the different ways across the different ones, and then mapped them to the, we mapped it to the SNOMED code at the time. I realize now we should have been doing the CPT code. But anyway, the idea was to see if this could be done. And then we evaluated the clinical statement models used in the CDA R2IG that John mentioned, and we looked at how they handled the information in that CDA. And then we explored options for representing the data elements requested using a terminology model, which would be the idea of, has the person had dialysis ever? And then that'd be yes, no. You know, sort of what happens if you model everything that way, what would you get? Versus if you use an information model, which would allow for more flexibility in expressing the time periods of interest and whatnot. And there you would avoid the combinatorial explosion. So we found in the 10 statements, just for procedures and exposures, there were 106 different unique data elements that could be reduced down to about 40 unique concepts that better match EHR data. For example, you know, history of tattoo, or tattoo and blah blah in another one, or you know, hemodialysis and dialysis and ever and all these things. So reduce that down, and then some of the data elements are not typically gathered by clinicians during patient care, such as some of the risk factors in particular for data acquisition and transmission. And we also noted that if you think about it, public health investigators gather evidence using a wider window than the traditional exposure period. For example, in the section C, it'll say, have they had dialysis in the last 2 weeks to 6 months? Well, trust me, a public health investigator would want to know if they had dialysis maybe in the last year. Or tell me if it's in the last, they'd want to know if it was 5 days ago or 7 months ago, as well as the 2 weeks ago to 6 months. So the questions that are currently in the position statements, I believe, are really the surveillance data elements. They are not the investigation elements. And basically, there's a need to be able to query for a broader time frame than what is actually included in those position statements. So based on all this, this is sort of our recommended approach for defining information to support investigation. So the first thing to do would be to harmonize and model the data elements, and then decide which concepts you would typically find in an EHR. So there's two. Those that would be in an EHR, like received a transmission, a transfusion, or a medication, or potentially an immunization record. Basically, map those to the typical EHR module and standard vocabulary, and identify the value sets that should be used for a query. And then there's a second set of data that's needed, and basically standardize those as you can, and then map them to LOINC if the questions are stable. You know, go ahead and make questions that are pre-coordinated and, you know, as specific as you need, if they're the questions that are really what is needed, you know. And then the third step would be to assess the time period of interest to be used for the queries for the relevant information, and then restructure the content in that section in order to make it more consumable. Okay, so if we go to step one, basically, if you take those four diseases, and they all had, this is just the dialysis section, this is what was in there. Basically, you'd want to model this request for information by disease, time period of interest, and then what that concept is that you're interested in, like dialysis or tattoo or whatever. And then for the concepts that are typically in an EHR, you'd map them, like I said, to the problem list concepts or medication or procedures, and you'd want to map to LOINC, ICD-9, SNOMED, CPT, whatever it is that you expect would be where you'd find it in the EHR and how you could extract it. And then you'd want to think about what are the pieces of information along with that that you would want from the EHR. There'd be an observation. The procedure would be an observation, and that procedure would have maybe a reason for the test or the reason for the whatever, and there are dates involved and whatnot. So there's some core information that pretty much goes along with observations that are stored in the EHR. For those that are not typically in an EHR, like I said before, you know, try to standardize them as much as you can, and then determine, there are some concepts that are already existing in LOINC. For example, there is a LOINC code for number of male sex partners in 6 months before symptom onset. Even that's different than the one that's 6 weeks to 6 months and whatnot. But basically, there's some things that are already in there. Basically, request clinical LOINC codes for the concepts that are unlikely to change in meaning, that are not typically found in EHR, and that, you know, aren't already present in LOINC. And the LOINC committee agreed with this. And then it's important to assess the time period of interest to be used to query for relevant information. So I put up here a little graphic that Jason made. And basically, typically, you know, you say you want to know about, this would be, you know, for if the question was for from onset to 2 weeks to 6 weeks prior to symptom onset, that's the classic exposure period. That's why that time frame is being used. But it's not really what public health wants for investigation. And so I would say that we need to understand for these things, for each disease, what is it that public health really wants, what time frame. And then finally, restructuring the content would look something like this. This is just sort of my brain on paper. But, you know, currently, you know, you've got the, this is what it says in that section for acute hep C. And so if you were to revise it, you would model it more like, what's the exposure period? You know, what's the red book or the, what, you know, what's the exposure period for that condition? But then the second element is, what is the time period of interest related to risk of transmission? Because you're not only interested in risk of receiving it, you also want to know about things that, from a public health perspective, you want to know if there are opportunities for that person to transmit prior to their being recognized by public health. And then you want to, for information to extract from an EHR, if present during the time period of interest, so itemizing those things, and then information to ask its questions concerning the time period of interest. So history of tattoo, history of body piercing, blah, blah, blah. Those things are not going to be in a EHR unless somebody were to actually probably use what we're developing here to create forms to put in an EHR. So the benefits, this strategy would be to help epidemiologists create and validate and maintain computable specifications for case report content. It would help implementers to map the data elements and query an EHR, and it would avoid a need to create LOINC codes for each disease-specific data element. And these disease-specific information can supplement a generic case report. It's not necessarily required for the initial report or to initiate reporting. The challenges are, we need a knowledge management system to be able to author, view, and distribute the value sets associated with these questions and answers for each reportable condition. Need something to support the validation and collaboration. Right now, it's like PDF documents going all over the world. And also, avoid death by spreadsheet. I was like, let's not create another ICD-10 code for asphyxiation by spreadsheets. But so we need to also ascertain input from the stakeholders involved in public health investigation. Oftentimes, the standards development work has involved individuals with expertise in surveillance, or they're at the state and federal level. It's not the practitioners who are having to respond. And then also there's, you know, issues related to non-standard data structures in the EHR, for example, occupational information and exposure information and whatnot. But you can't wait until all of that is solved. I think there's a lot of information in the EHR that you can predict how it would be structured, and that's the information we should be going for. And others, you know, you provide two ways to gather it. So our recommended next steps would be to restructure the content in that section, and then to harmonize the disease-specific data elements, particularly current social history and risk-associated procedures and exposures, get input from local as well as state and federal epidemiologists, also need to address what level of specificity is most useful for the investigator to assess potential exposures and transmission risks. The questions that are in that section really are geared towards the surveillance and what information needs to be gathered after a whole investigation is done. So I guess what I'm saying is do not loin code what is existing in those position statements. There's a bunch of work that needs to be done before that should be implemented. And then we also need to address what time period of interest is related to risk of transmission. And basically need to consider risks of acquisition as well as risk of secondary transmission. And then develop and adapt the existing existing knowledge management system to support this task. And then finally request loin codes for well-established questions associated with the information needed for investigation but not typically found in an EHR. And that's it. Thank you.
We are going to hold off on questions unless there's a burning question that you need to ask as I toggle to the other presentation. Okay, our next presenter is Denise Worzel. Denise, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay, we can hear you. So.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Denise Worzel, and as John noted already, I do work for the National Cancer Institute and have been working on the distribution of data standards since my tenure there, about 12 years now. So our project essentially is to, it's a pilot project, and John, I'm trying to click next page, but it's not, all right, so am I driving or are you driving, just so I know?
I think I
am. Okay. So SUNDAC approached us about 3 or 4 months ago and thought that we might see if there was a role that some of the tools NCI has could play in this project that Catherine's mentioning. And so we decided to take sort of a small subset of what they've been working on, including the common core elements and then specifically the acute hepatitis B disease-specific data elements that Catherine just mentioned, and see how and whether those could be represented in our infrastructure. The infrastructure that I'm talking about has been used by NCI for a number of different projects, including recording the data elements for all of our clinical trials. But another element that was interesting was that we also have a similar working group looking at standardizing case report forms for clinical trials. And so I'm going to talk just a minute about the similar project and how they're using this infrastructure, and then talk in detail about what the work that was done to see how well this lines up with what you need to do or what the case report standardization working group might need. Next. Okay, the NCI case report standardization project began in 2006 and is ongoing. I have the wiki address there for those of you who might be interested. The goal was to establish a core library of these standardized case report forms by building stakeholder consensus. And you can see that, again, looking for subject matter experts who know exactly what they do need to see when particular conditions are reported is important in getting first the content that you need, and then once you've got that content, the role that we played in IT was trying to help disseminate it. So these case report forms are being designed for all Phase 1, Phase 2, and Phase 3 trials. And then we're putting these standardized case report forms into something called the NCI Cancer Data Standards Repository and Registry. The name that it's used for that is CADSR. And once it's in CADSR, we use the tools in that collection of software tools and techniques to distribute the standards to the community. It consists of a database and a number of tools for creating, monitoring, and disseminating computable descriptions of data elements and case report forms. For the current harmonization project, There have been 353 common data elements established, and of course they started with many more than that, but as they began looking across the different sections of these existing case report forms, they discovered common elements and made some tweaks to those elements so that they could come up with the minimum number. And the kinds of differences that we saw were very similar to the ones that Catherine showed you, where the question may have been very similar, but exactly the way it was asked and some of the words that were used were different enough that you may not get the same answer. From these 353 common data elements, which we call CDEs, there are 27 case report forms that have been developed. 18 of them are far enough along that we've actually represented them in one of our tools called the Form Builder. Next slide. This is just a screen snap from our Form Builder tool. What I wanted to point out here is that, as noted, there will be common sort of sections on a case report form that you want to see across all forms, and then there will be some that are disease specific. And so the little blue arrows that you see are meant to depict four modules out of these 18 that could then be used to create a new case report form. So if you go to the next slide, you can see this is sort of the hypothetical construction of a new case report form by reusing the header module, the staging and extent of disease module, an agents module, and an outcomes module, and then adding maybe a local sign-off that's required to create this new form on the right-hand side. And the distinction between this approach and maybe what you've seen with implementation guides is that these modules now have been described in the CADSR, which is a database. And so the questions and answers are structured in a way that the computer can understand them, which assures that when they're deployed to one of these new case report forms on the right-hand side, that all the details are the same. The label for the field is the same. If there's a pick list or value set for answering that question on the form, it is exactly the same. And so it helps to ensure consistency. Next slide. Okay, so some of the other benefits with the standardized mechanism is that having these things represented in a database allows you to more easily compare across case report forms and aggregate information that's been collected from them across different clinical trial portfolios. I think, you know, in a similar manner, if you had all the hepatitis position statements reusing the same data elements, then you'd have an interesting capability to compare and contrast data that's been collected across those. When those descriptions are in documents and when you have different committees creating these documents, you can get slight variations that were unintended and maybe not necessary, as Catherine's student's work has shown. Once you have these standardized forms, you can create a core library of them that's available electronically that will help to improve the efficiency and accuracy of reviewing the safety and efficacy of the various different trials that we have going on. In other words, it becomes very easy to test whether a new case report form has reused items from the core library or not. If not, then you might want to look a little bit more closely at what data they were collecting because it may not have come from the standard. Once these are in a library, it can reduce the time spent in developing a new data collection strategy for trial or for each incident. And then it allows for faster initiation of new trials and thus speeds the process of delivering new and improved treatments. So this is the kind of benefit that NCI has seen from taking the work that Catherine's doing and then putting it into a structured electronic form to make it more easy to be consumed. Next slide. So just to show you where we are in this process, this is a slide that you saw from Catherine's slide deck, and the area that I'm working in really pertains to the area in red, that after the subject matter experts have gone through all the criteria and figured out what the relevant items are that they want information on, then the kind of work that NCI has done in our infrastructure allows you to take that Section C information and create it in a consumable format that computers can read. Next slide. Okay, so our approach to this little pilot, basically there were six steps. I started by reviewing the common core data elements and the CSTE acute hepatitis B disease-specific elements, and then looking in step two to see whether we had any elements in CADSR already that had already been described, some of them in the core elements area in particular, like gender, occupation, things that pertain to demographics, are the ones that I've found that were pre-existing. And then the ones that are more specific to acute hepatitis B, of course, and cancer research, we didn't have much for that. But basically, I went through each element looking for a matching item in CADSR. Step three was to review the selected elements and begin to associate LOINC codes with those elements. Having shown a preference for using LOINC within your working group, I've discovered that there are quite a few that are almost right, but not exactly right. And as Catherine has said, we aren't asking LOINC to create anything at this point. We're just doing the initial review. But there probably will be new LOINC codes that you'll want to have created for things that are not covered in the EHR, but that are specific to the diseases that you want to collect information for. The fourth step is to associate these CSTE data elements with the CDC FIN-VADS value sets. We haven't done this step yet, but we have a mechanism in our infrastructure for linking to these external value sets, and we wanted to test that out. And then we wanted to create draft representation of the core common data elements and the disease-specific data elements so that you could have this mix-and-match capability that I mentioned earlier, where you can take sections from the core common elements and then sections from a particular disease and snap them together to make a new form. And then our last step, which we also haven't done yet, is to review and revise the above and discuss how well our infrastructure helps to meet your needs or not, and determine whether this is something we can work on together going forward. Next slide. Okay, so in step one, and what I'm going to take you through now is just a snippet of each of those six steps so that you understand the work that's been done. As I mentioned, we took the core common elements from some documentation that Catherine and Sundak provided, as well as the disease-specific elements. Next slide. And here you see the format that she was talking about, that each of the position statements have this section C, and they describe various data points that need to be collected. So the second step was working with those lists. I went through and started trying to find NCI elements. And the first thing that I came across was something called complex data elements. Those of you who have looked at the Common Core data elements are probably familiar with this, but I wanted to mention it because it does create more data elements than you might think if you're just looking at the different categories for the common elements. Essentially, what I mean by a complex data element from that document that Sundak provided, you'd have something like an identifier that you can see in the middle column there. And when they say they want you to collect an identifier, what they really mean is for you to collect these three simple data elements: identifier, identifier assigning authority, and identifier type. So that means for the identifier element that we might call an element, we actually have three elements. And so I've just shown this here to so that when you see something like name, you realize that it really is four data elements, phone is two data elements, address, et cetera. So when I talk about a data element and the kind of stuff that we store in our infrastructure, we can store both of these representations, the one that says identifier needs to be these three elements, but when we're talking about a data element, we're really thinking of that individual data item, the three data items, not the one identifier. Okay, next slide. Okay, so when I say 165 data elements that were in the core common document, common data element document, they were organized into nine categories. And again, I'm talking about the data element that says that there are three items in some cases for one. And I've just shown each of the nine categories: report, reporter, provider, ordering facility, subject, employment, and so forth. And to the right, let's take number two as an example. In the NCI, I thought that the most likely candidate for reusing NCI items was things that we call person and person that are related to a specific facility. And so we have reporters in your lexicon that we would call a person, and there were about 19 data elements that we could reuse. We had a provider that's been defined as a person within the CSTE elements, and we think that's probably a healthcare provider, and so forth. So I've lined them up with the categories in NCI that looked the most likely, and these, again, is subject to review. There were 18 more elements for hepatitis B, so a total of 183 elements if you were going to collect information for acute hepatitis B incident, and those have been described in both of the two documents that Catherine mentioned. Okay, next slide. interesting one statistic on that page that I didn't talk to, but that was on the slide, is that only 10 to 20% of the elements that were in that 183 were not already in some part of them in CADSR already, which is interesting from the standpoint that hepatitis has sometimes been thought of as potentially a precursor to cancer, certain kinds of cancer, and if we could be collecting data in our clinical trials using the same data elements that you collect in either the EMR or in your outbreak studies, it could provide for some interesting meta-analysis after, you know, sort of post-analysis. Okay, so within the step two where I did the matching up and either had to add a new item or flag something as being reused, we ended up with something in the CADSR for each of those elements. So this particular one is the healthcare facility identifier, and I mentioned that identifier really is three data elements, so I was able to find two elements, if you look at the bottom of the page, two elements that say context CA big. Those two elements were already in our registry, and then I created a new element for identifier assignment authority name, which is the third of the three elements that need to be collected for all identifiers. And so this information now has been put into the CADSR and is available for review. There are a number of other tabs on this page in our browser. I'm not going to go through all of those, but the repository allows you to collect a lot of information specific to each individual data element. Next slide. So all of the elements that I found, I've organized into a section in our browser tree that's on the left, and I've put a red box around it. If any of you want to visit the website, the URL is on the page, and you will see a CDC. It's probably too small to see on the slide there, but it's a CDC context, and then as you drill down into the classifications, you'll see that I flagged some for acute V hepatitis, and the others I found were put into the core common data elements section. And then there's a collection of possible CDEs for reuse that are still waiting to be reviewed. So far, I've identified 116 out of the 183. Next slide. Okay, the third step was to go into these elements that already existed or any that the new that I had created and see if I could find a LOINC code that matched. And wherever I did, I added the LOINC code. You can see here this particular item for patient identifier. There was a LOINC code 21866-9, so I added that as an alternate name. I also added the CSTE, Common Core Data Element Name, which is subject identifier. At this point, I also have the ability to attach reference documents, preferred label or question text, and so forth. So I curated everything that I could based on the documentation that I had been given, including the definition, which in the Common Core Data Elements document was identifier of the subject of the report. You can see the type is manually curated, and I created it for CDC. Next slide. The next step, which we haven't done yet because I don't have the PINVADS value sets available, but we do have a tool that's going to facilitate this if we decide to continue, and that it allows us to compare the value sets of data elements that are in the registry with each other. So in this case, I had identified three possible date of birth. There is a CSTE data element for date of birth, but I hadn't been given the data type or value set information yet. So when I flagged these three and put them in the bucket for possible reuse, and you can see here, I'm not sure how big your screen is there, but I'm pointing to the definition row, and in that definition row you can see that there are three date of birth possible CDEs. The main difference is, or the only difference is, the format in which the date of birth has been collected. The first one is month, year, day, month, year. The next one is day, year, month. And the last one is day, month, year. So, actually, I'm sorry, one is month and year, and the other is day, month, year. So what we would do then is we'd take whatever format the CDC determines to be the preferred format. We'd compare it with these three in our compare tool, and then we'd select one of them for them to standardize on. Next slide. After we do that, we would come back and refine these case report form templates in our form builder application. I'm showing an example here of the module for the three data elements that were defined for report. I've essentially got a section up here called report at the top where the blue arrow is, and then there are three data elements, report created date, date report submitted, and reporting system. Of those three, I can tell you that the last one, reporting system, is the only additional element I had to create. The other two are data elements that we're using in our case report forms. Slide. Okay, so again, Catherine mentioned that there are two documents, one for each disease-specific reportable event, and there's data elements specific to that, and then the core common elements. And so to mirror that kind of setup in the CDSR, I created two documents. Next slide. The first item in the middle there is the public health reporting and national notification core common data elements. And then the second item is the hepatitis B infections. And so if we were to open those up, you would see, I showed you the one on the left, the three elements for report. There'd be one for each of the nine categories, one section for each of the nine categories. And then in the hepatitis B, there would be one for all of the items in section C, the disease-specific data elements. Next slide. Okay, so I just sort of drafted a hypothetical approach similar to the one that we've been using, where you would copy the core elements for your report. You would copy whatever sections you're going to be using to collect information for this reportable condition and adding the disease specific. Again, the benefit being that you're constructing this data collection form from structured metadata as opposed to reading and interpreting it out of a document, which can be sometimes error prone. The other thing that allows you to do within our infrastructure is for you to add any local elements that you might be collecting for your state or local territory that you want to add on to this particular disease case report form, and you can store those in the repository as well. Next slide. Now, once this information is in the repository that I'm talking about, there are various ways to get the information out. They can be downloaded into an Excel spreadsheet, they can be downloaded as XML, and then lastly there is an electronic application programming interface in which all of this information can be extracted. And the way that's being used at NCI, for example, is the data elements, the standards that have been agreed upon for a particular trial are put together on these forms, and then the forms are downloaded into an Excel spreadsheet. And that Excel spreadsheet is used to import into our clinical trials management system, ensuring that all of the data elements that are collected for each trial are collected with exactly the same specification, the same wording for the question, the same value list. There are now also a number of open source tools and vendor tools that have been harmonized with the CADSR. Medidata is one of them. They have a tool called RAVE for customizing a clinical trial. That tool can allow you to pull in data elements and case report forms from the CADSR to customize the data collection system. EpiInfo takes XML documents, and there's a tool called REDCap that's used by a big portion of our community in the CTSA group that allows you to also import these descriptions from an Excel spreadsheet to create an actual data collection form. So a number of benefits for getting the information into a system like CADSR where you've got access to information that's well-structured and can be used by another computer system. Next page. So in summary, the kinds of infrastructure that have been used during this pilot and also could be used going forward. Of course, I didn't need to take any training, but there is self-paced training that can be taken if CDC were to decide to take this up. We get trained curators who could put this content in and make use of the tools. There's one tool for developing data elements. We call that the data element curation tool. Allows you to search for existing content or create new content from bits and pieces of elements that we already have. You can create the links to LOINC or other terminology sources. SNOMED is another one that we can allow you to link to. We have the data element browser that lets you go in and look for the elements that have been created for CDC, put them into a shopping cart, and use that with our download capability or with the form builder. Again, I mentioned XML or Microsoft Excel format and the API. And then our form builder cart, our form builder also has a cart so that you can put the whole form into a cart. And that kind of tool is what's being used by Medidata Rave, coming in and getting not just individual data elements, but the particular structure, the list of questions that you want asked and in what order, and then just pulling that back in to customize their software. And then lastly, we have something called the Sentinel tool, but if you were to come in and use this system and download the CDC's standard case reporting information and then customize it locally, you can sign up for notifications of any changes. Let's say they put a new version out or they add elements to it. You would get an automatic email explaining what the before and after changes were so that you could stay abreast of changes as they occur. Okay, next slide. There are a number of groups using this for various different purposes. This slide is just a subset of both cancer divisions within NCI and also other institutes within NIH that are using the system. The case report form standardization project that I mentioned with 353 elements is just one project. Cancer Therapy Evaluation Program has been using the system since 2001. They've literally got tens of thousands of data elements and over 2,600 case report forms that they use for all of their clinical trials reporting. The Center for Cancer Research is the group that I mentioned that describes all of their data elements and case report forms in CADSR and then downloads them into Excel and imports them into our clinical trials management system, which is based on Oracle. The Division of Cancer Prevention has over 1,300 elements in it, 58 case report forms and templates for reuse across their activities. The National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute is using the repository to record the data elements and case report forms that they use for their national marrow donor program. And this is helping, they found a number of inconsistencies across the different areas that were running marrow donor programs, even though they had a document that explained exactly what's supposed to be collected. Again, when you translate from a document into a computer system, it sometimes doesn't end up the same way. And so they have 30 of their case report forms, and they've got another 70, I believe, that they're planning to register. The National Institute of Dental and Craniofacial Research is using the case report forms on research for dental and craniofacial diseases, and the National Institute of Neurological Diseases and Strokes have just begun using the registry this year. They've already got 123 data elements in and 21 case report forms. So again, the benefits really are, the reason they're doing this as opposed to continuing with just paper implementation guides is to reduce that element of error that can occur as you do your own translation of what it says on the paper to something in your database. This allows them to pull that information across, define it once, and pull it across many times in different ways. Next slide. So where might we go from here? It would be to continue to work on step three, where we were identifying LOINC codes, although I think it sounds like we'd want to wait until Catherine and her group have finished going back through the different documents for specific disease elements and harmonizing those. We gave a presentation and update to LOINC about this project about a week ago, and they were very enthusiastic about working with you to develop new codes where needed. I think partnership and working with them so they can help point to the specific code that you might want, it will be important, because as I was looking for them, I found sometimes more than one code that seemed appropriate. But with their help, I think that could certainly be worked out. Another thing is that the LOINC codes don't have text definitions. They essentially depend on you looking at the concept within its hierarchy, kind of its position in the hierarchy, and figuring out what it means that way. Sometimes that may not be sufficient, but if you're using our infrastructure, we do have definitions for some of those same terms that have been curated either by the UMLS MetaThesaurus or within our own thesaurus called the NCI Thesaurus. We'd need to review the use of the complex elements as variables versus very detailed pre-coordinated elements. One of the things that LOINC pointed out is that if you have just a general data element called identifier value, you don't know whose identifier that is. If you have something like reporter last name versus last name, you've lost the notion that it was in the reporter category. So they were suggesting that we actually might want to use the complex data element notion so that you know you need to collect 3 for identifier and 4 for name, but when you got down to the individual data element, they might want to have a LOINC code that says specifically healthcare provider last name, as opposed to just last name, so that you wouldn't lose that context by making the LOINC codes too general. Next slide. We still need to review the current progress that I've made and identify any issues or gaps in the NCI tool functionality. For example, step 4, we need to go back through and review the value sets that you'd like to use, and it may turn out that parts of CDEs can be reused, the part that describes the question, and then we may want to link that to a CDC FIN value set in order to provide a standardized set of values that's specific for your purpose as opposed to the cancer research environment. Step 6, we want to review and revise the approach for representing the core elements and the data elements in Section C of the reportable conditions documents or position statements. That part we probably spent the least time on and would want to be sure that we're expressing the data elements in the way that's the most useful for you. But I think that essentially coming up with these sections that can be pasted together to create standard case report forms from reusable parts is the main takeaway. Once we get those standard reusable parts put together into a case report form, we can actually link the official position statements, the traditional document that you would have had, we can link that to the electronic version, and so you'd have both electronic representation of it and the paper document to refer to. Next slide. These are just some useful links. I mentioned the training that's available, and then the 3 tools that I was using. The CDE browser is our public browser. That's where you would find the CDC context to take a look at some of the elements we've put in there already, and then Form Builder to take a look at the 2 documents, the core common elements and the disease-specific elements for hepatitis B. Okay. I want to thank you for your time, and I think we're all available to take questions.
Okay, so at this time, the floor is open, and I hope that you do have some questions. I think the 2 presentations provided us with a perspective of the work that's going on in case reporting and how far we need to, I think, still go in a lot of ways, particularly because a lot of what has been going on with the CRSWG is a voluntary effort in a lot of part by Catherine and her students and state epidemiologists a part of it, as well as other stakeholders, like the work that NCI is doing as well. So, questions. We do have a microphone, so hopefully I'll try to run quickly back there.
Yeah. Which EHR schema did you use to assess your experiment with your students? Did you have one that they brought to the hospital? Did you pick a vendor schema?
No, we didn't.
Can you just repeat the question so folks on the...
Yes, which EHR schema we used to consider how you would structure something in the... We didn't specifically look at an EHR schema. I mean, we just from our knowledge of what you would expect in a clinical record, that there's problem modules and medication modules and thinking about it that way. Just
I really like the concept. I'm just curious.
Well, what I would love to ask Denise, unless somebody else, is, are the forms, is the output of the activity, you've got a form that then someone can, you're talking about creating forms for people to manually enter the data, is that the idea? Or are you, also can you use what you've assembled to be able to create a query against the EHR?
Okay, so let me answer the first part of the question first, which is the NCI system does not collect data, but I'll call it metadata, the information we've entered to describe the form can be reused in a system that does collect data.
Right.
So that's one possible benefit or reuse of the data once you've described it in a repository like this. in terms of using the data to form a query, it depends on how we end up structuring the Section C information of each for each of the diseases. It could form a checklist with the LOINC codes in it that you'd need to look for in an EHR. In that case, you could take the metadata and use each of the responses as a query based on that LOINC code. I'd need to know more about the kinds of queries that you're trying to do, what the target system is, to see how we might leverage the content that we create for that purpose.
So say you said, just tell me if I've got it right. If you would have a LOINC code for risk-associated procedure, mm-hmm. and then the value sets in that would be in FinVADS would be the value set of procedures like transfusion and transplant, so you had, is that where you would, and then that would be, those relationships would be defined in this tool as well as in FinVADS, and then that's what could be exported by a vendor system to be able to create their query, given what they know about where they would find things in their EHR?
Right. So it would say, for this particular LOINC question, use this particular FinVADS answer set.
Right.
So they'd have all of that information sort of bundled together in an electronic way that they could pull it into their system. And if they tell you that they use that particular identifier, then you would know they use the LOINC code that asked the question and that they had to pull their answer from the FinVADS value set. So it would provide traceability between what someone's saying. If they're sending you a report, you'd have traceability that they actually use what you consider to be the latest paradigm, meaning the latest question and answer set. So it's pulling together the answer set and the question that, and plugging it into this registry that gives you that. That's one of many ways it could be used. But yes, it points the question to the answer set. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that addresses your question. Yeah.
Questions? Yeah, questions from the audience. Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't have time to actually point to any of the FinVADS value sets, so I couldn't show an example of that. But you did see the three patient dates of birth, where we do collect more detailed information than just the question label and. If you look at the specific disease elements in your position statements, it basically tells you what question to ask, but it doesn't tell you how to encode the answer, for example. They're not necessarily yes-no questions. In some cases, you might want to record a procedure code or something like that using LOINC.
So, Catherine, my question is Sean Granis from Regents Reef. What sort of rubric or metric did you use to decide what elements were typically captured in an EHR? I know you've mentioned problem categories and so on and so forth. Was it? I'm just trying to understand what gauge you used for that.
If there is a question for me, I'm afraid you'll have to repeat it because I'm not getting.
That's okay. Sean asked, "How did we? What rubric did we use to identify to classify what elements we expected would be in an EHR?" This was just a student project, and we. We were looking at what kinds of information. We know that in EHRs, there's information that's structured about procedures and medications, immunizations. And we also used, and we know that in the EHR, information about travel history is unstructured in most EHRs would be unstructured. So I didn't use it. We didn't use a particular document.
Subject matter expertise,
exactly.
Basically. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Thank you.
I think the idea is that that we're just pointing out the strategy for moving forward. That there are things. I think the problem is everybody. I think lots of times we think that we need to go one way or another way, and the point that we want to make is that. We need to accommodate both. That this a set of information that people want that should just be queried for when possible, and there's a set of information that that you just need to ask the question, and it needs to be pre-coordinated, just like a survey. And going forward in reviewing the position statements, there needs to be a more systematic way of getting that information from the people who are authoring it. You know, so that's the idea.
Do we have any other questions in the audience?
No, you can ask them.
Yeah, please
do. You
should
just come up here and say it in the thing so I don't have to...
You mentioned, Catherine, with the logic analyzer that you're able to find overlap within and between diseases. Can you give an example of what that overlap looks like?
So with the logic analyzer, we found overlaps within and between diseases. So an example was the logic for hepatitis B, I think it had, I can't remember which one, but the bottom line is that for hepatitis B, there'd be, if you have a HBsAg positive test result, then the it should come true for chronic hepatitis B. But then it also said, if you have HBsAg positive plus you have these symptoms, it should come true for hepatitis B, chronic hepatitis B. So there were several cases where the logic is overly complicated. If in the one case just having a positive test result means it will come true, there's no reason to have the more complicated logic. And in fact, implementing the more complicated logic is difficult. I mean, then the implementer is like, ooh, where do I find these symptoms, and da da da. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because so then that's a case of where within a disease it was more complicated than it needs to be. There are actually many other examples. And then between diseases, there was, when we actually first worked with, and Wagon was part of this too, we've worked with had the hepatitis epidemiologist focused on hepatitis, were revising the logic back in April, and they actually had removed, they changed the logic from 2010, and when we ran it through, it basically there was major overlap between B, C, and A, basically with all. So then by, with the tool, they proposed some other formulations, and we went ahead and showed them what would happen if you did it this way versus that way. And so they were able to streamline their logic, because it's really hard to imagine logic on a piece of paper, which is what they're having to do in those submission statements. So by having a tool where they can tweak it and then see what the outcome, basically it would show the overlap in logic statements between within a disease and between. We have a poster on it, actually, that was presented, and I'd be happy to send it to you. And then you had another question.
Yeah. You mentioned there are atypical data elements that are typically captured in EHR. You advocate to launch code those atypical elements. I'm wondering, so I understand standardizing is good, but how would you see
questions that are important to the public health investigators that they really would like to get during their investigation on an initial case report. I mean, you could imagine, maybe somebody help me out here. So what would be an example? Travel history, somebody, say you had a trigger for. Okay, so I could imagine that in FinBads or maybe there'd be a registry of questions that should be asked for a certain condition. And those questions would be like, international travel, recent international travel. And that could be associated with whatever, you know, what would that be important for? SARS and you know, all these different things. So those would be, so that question, recent international travel, that is something that's, you know, that's a pre-coordinated concept that has lots of added stuff that should go with it. But that's a question that probably is pretty common across several position statements, and it's probably, if the person did have recent international travel, the public health person would want to know about that. And then they would dig in for more information. Like, some questions don't have to be the specific detail. It's just that the epidemiologist wants to know if there's a flag that they need to follow up on. So I imagine that for that, and there's a bunch of other kinds of questions like that, there should be basically a registry of questions that would then, I mean, I'm sort of pie in the sky, but you could imagine that those are like surveillance, like questionnaire, like all the other, anyway, so that could be, if this is true, then it sent back to a vendor would be, you know, an XML file with the particular questions that are associated with that condition. And then someone would manually, that would pop up, you know, and the clinician would manually enter that and then send it back.
So the model is the EHR interacting with some sort of knowledge.
Right.
That
exactly. Right. And so that, and it's not that the questions per se would not be stored in the EHR. The EHR would know where to go grab those questions, would enable the person to complete them and then to send it off.
Yeah, I think we struggle with that in our own, you know, as we are standardizing data elements across conditions. It's really what we'd like to have versus things that, you know, we thought would be a part of the EHR. So I think we've struggled with that. But, you know, so we went forward to define those data elements in a lot of ways to, or at least try to standardize those data elements, hoping that at some point that we can make that available. But Judy, you had a question?
Maybe turn it on. I don't know if it's not on.
Isn't it? I think our hope is to be able to do less investigation with good EHR data, especially for the chronic diseases that take so much time. So I think what we hope to be able to do with drawing data from a statewide HIE is to have structured data on perhaps symptoms. So you could look to meet case definition for many diseases. Do you see that happening? Or, you know, what is the adoption of codes for things like out-of-state travel or out-of-country travel to areas that we know have these diseases that would be important to get that? And so at what point is that advocacy happening to get that public health data structured in a format that we could all read and utilize and save ourselves a lot of time?
So, NIOSH is just requested an IOM committee look at standardizing occupational health information in the EHR, and actually I'm part of that committee, and basically, you know, that's an effort to say, yes, it needs to be done, you know, and I think it's going to, but, you know, it's complicated, but I think if the focus becomes on that, there needs to be a concerted effort, you know, frankly, it's probably part of meaningful use saying, you know, these things thou shalt happen, you know, in order to make it more structured. There needs to be standards, there needs to be coordinate, you know, collaboration between the vendor community and the clinical community and to create the models for how to store this information. Maybe not how to store it in the EHR, but how to message it, you know, once, so that it can be shared. I think public health should expect that the EHR store everything that public health needs. I think that we need to think about ways to gather that information, and we need to be, public health needs to be very clear about what it is that it wants to receive. I think that.
Will there be a code for genres?
Will there be a code for genres?
There it is. Yeah.
So that you would get that.
Well, there are. Mm-hmm. So there would need to be a place where that information is stored in a structured, you way. I mean, it, so I think that there are standard codes for jaundice. It's just that whether a particular EHR would store that in a, in, you know, in a structured way, or whether it's in just in free text, how you actually get it from the EHR to where it can be used to populate something that can be shared is actually what is related to the CADSR in a way. You can map things to, first you have to define what you want, and then the systems can map where it is in their system to here. If the information is stored here in your system, then you map it to there. If it's stored here in your other system, then you map it that way. If it's not stored in a structured way, then somehow you're going to have to make that be processed in order to pull out the things that are needed. And then once, using natural language processing or something, then you identify the concepts like jaundice, and then you would map that to the standard information that needs to be pulled. So
we have about 2 or 3 more minutes. Sean, did you have one more, or just stretching?
Defining exactly what it is that you want, then there's another step of how do you get what you want out of what's
sure.
there.
So the slide that I have up here, which I pulled from the Public Health Data Standards Consortium, the document Building a Roadmap for Health Information Systems. I think what we are, what Catherine talked about, expressing what those needs and priorities are, and somewhat we're really just in those first two column areas, and as we start to I think progress in this sort of phase of trying to achieve interoperability and work with these pull type of information we'd like from the electronic health record system, it's really going through this process. I at least this is the reference point that I'm working with here, but it's somewhat it seems very logical that we need to get to the latter stages to be able to get to the point of what you just expressed and trying to get this type of information. With that said, we are at the top of the hour, and we want to thank you very much. There are other sessions that address public health case reporting. I know that there is one specifically tomorrow. I don't know the exact time, but it is covering the ONC standards and interoperability framework, and there's a specific case reporting initiative that will be discussed. I believe it's tomorrow afternoon, so please do attend that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.